Coming up on Fronteras, Burmese refugees living in the Southwest are working hard to learn English. Some are illiterate.
You will see some of them who have not held a pencil before, who are now just beginning to write.
Refugees over 65 can get a monthly stipend from the federal government. It's the only money most of these seniors have. It runs out if they don't get their citizenship within 7 years of arriving in this country. To get that, they have to pass the test in English. Women migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border face many dangers on the journey, including rape. Those crimes usually go unpunished, but there's one case in an Arizona court that's different.
We have a brave young girl who's able to speak up. We have members of the group who witnessed the crime, and we have this alleged rapist in our custody.
A rare chance for justice on the border. The story coming up, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created through an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among several public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. The U.S. Border Patrol has issued new guidelines for agents involved in rock-throwing incidents. Contrary to widespread media reports, the new guidelines do not forbid agents from firing their weapons at rock-throwers. Fronteras desk reporter Lorne Madelon went to the scene of an incident in Juarez that helped shape the new directive.
In Juarez, at the Paseo del Norte Bridge across from El Paso, Texas, a man plays a mournful ode to a would-be immigrant with no papers. In 2010, under this bridge, a Mexican teenager approached the border fence. He was part of a group allegedly throwing rocks at a Border Patrol agent. The 15-year-old was shot and killed by that agent. The case spawned a lawsuit and calls for a review of how the Border Patrol deals with rock-throwing incidents.
What has changed is that this new directive provides guidance on defusing circumstances before they get to the point where use of force might be necessary.
That's El Paso Sector Deputy Chief Kari Huffman. He says that from his level down to the Border Patrol Academy, the job now is to reinforce the notion that agents should try when possible to avoid firing at rock-throwers. But statistics show the patrol's been proactive on this issue well before the new guideline was crafted. Since 2010, agents have been assaulted with rocks 1,700 times. Agents fired back 43 times. 10 people have been killed. Huffman believes that's a tragedy, but one that's unavoidable at times.
We do not know the bad guys or people that want to do us harm are going to do. But in the end, Border Patrol agents are not required to be the recipient of assault by rocks and do nothing in response.
Headlines in recent days have often been wrong. Here's a sample. Chief admonishes Border Patrol on use of force. Or, Border Patrol reverses course on use of force. Neither is true. What is the case is that a still unreleased critical report on the use of force was issued in November by the Police Executive Research Forum. That's a law enforcement group in Washington. That report started a process which ended with the new guideline that says deadly force may only be used where agents have a reasonable belief their life is in danger. Agents have been told to avoid situations where there's no alternative but to use their weapons.
Any professional law enforcement organization is always going to be looking for ways to do things better, smarter, and safer. And this is a step in that direction. It is not a retreat in any stretch of the imagination as has been portrayed, but you can be smarter without retreating.
I spoke with Mexican sociologist Jessica Pena. She's a professor at the Autonomous University of Juarez. While she wonders if the new directive will reduce violence, Pena says her government is guilty as well for rock throwing. She says the Mexican government fails continually to keep its citizens from wanting to leave so desperately that they'll hurl rocks to cross the border.
I understand why are they doing it, but I wouldn't say it's right, you know. They're using that rock, you know, to really hurt someone, and they can do it, so that is not good.
Then she asks rhetorically, what would the U.S. reaction be if Mexican federales shot and killed an American on U.S. soil? Beside the border fence in Fort Hancock, Texas, farmer Craig Miller says new rules of engagement are unnecessary.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's kind of like sending our armed services into battle and telling them that you can't shoot at them until they shoot at you first and you just hope they miss.
3 months ago, volunteers for the Border Network for Human Rights went to El Paso and nearby communities to gather stories of mistreatment. The organization didn't find one grievance against the Border Patrol. Again, Deputy Chief Huffman.
Yes, entering the country illegally is against the law, but the penalty should not be death. And that's what we want to avoid, if possible.
Some critics say the new directive is just a first step. They want public disclosure of actions taken when agents are involved in a fatality. Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona has said Border Patrol agents have a tough task, requiring split-second decisions that are almost always second-guessed. But he said that it is appropriate to review past incidents that involve deadly force. I'm Lorne Madelon in El Paso.
Rape is one of the most widely known risks for women migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. And yet, justice for those crimes is almost always elusive. As Jude Jaffe Block reports from the Fronteras desk, women who make the journey are doing what they can to prepare for that grim possibility.
This pharmacy in the smuggling town of Altar in northern Mexico is the last stop for many migrants preparing to make the dangerous trek across the Sonoran Desert into Arizona. Pharmacist Maria Jaime Peña says women often come in asking the same exact question.
¿Qué puedo hacer en caso de ser violada?
What can I do in case I'm raped and I don't want to get pregnant? Peña recommends an injection for 48 pesos, less than $4. Sometimes, she says, the guides or coyotes advise their female clients to go on birth control. That was the case for Maria Salinas, a petite 43-year-old who recently tried crossing with her teenage daughter. I met Salinas at a crowded soup kitchen in Nogales, Mexico, for migrants who've just been deported. Salinas says at first she was confused why a coyote at the start of the trip would offer her and other women birth control. Later on, it made sense. Because coyotes know what they're going to do in the middle of the desert, she says. Once Salinas started walking with the group, she couldn't keep up. She says one of the coyotes said he'd wait for her, but only if he could have sex with her daughter. They refused, and he abandoned them. They only survived because they found Border Patrol.
Es muy feo.
It's awful, she says, about making this trip as a woman.
No se lo deseo a nadie.
I wouldn't wish it on anyone. And when a woman is raped in remote stretches of the border region, it almost always goes unpunished. Almost.
You can see where we're at here. We're up on a tall mesa. There's mesquite. Not a lot of water here.
Border Patrol spokesman Peter Bittigan hiked me out to the remote spot in southern Arizona where agents found a group of 9 migrants this winter, including a 14-year-old girl.
If a migrant is walking through this area, they've walked for 4 or 5 days from the border to get to here through extremely rugged terrain in the Atascosa and Tumacacori Mountains.
This group was almost all men. The 14-year-old was from the southern state of Oaxaca and was crossing to meet her parents in the U.S. Since she's a minor, we're calling her by her first initial, L. When agents arrested the group, they tried to load everyone into a truck for processing, but L hesitated.
The young girl seemed pretty scared to get in the vehicle with everyone. One of the members of the group pulled an agent aside and told him the story about how this girl had been raped by one of the guys in the group.
Her alleged rapist is also alleged to be the group's coyote. El just knew him by the nickname El Vibero, or the snake, according to records from the local sheriff's office. Because of where the group was walking, authorities say El was assaulted twice in Arizona, meaning American law enforcement has jurisdiction to prosecute. And they are. Bittigan says what happened to El wasn't unique, but the outcome was.
We have a brave young girl who's able to speak up. We have members of the group who witnessed the crime, and we have this alleged rapist in our custody.
Finally, we were able to be successful and hopefully catch somebody that we could hold accountable.
Tony Estrada is the Santa Cruz County Sheriff. He's been trying for years to get justice for rapes against migrants. El Vibero, who's 23 and whose real name is Jose Ramon Mancinas Flores, is now facing 2 felony counts of sex with a minor and could face decades in prison. Estrada says it's rare for migrants to report violent crimes to his office.
They will continue in spite of having been assaulted, having been robbed, having been shot at, and having been raped. because it's been a real long journey, a very dangerous, expensive one for them. And for them to report it to the authorities would mean that they were more than likely be deported.
There aren't reliable statistics on border rapes. Estrada thinks they've increased since amped-up border security has funneled migrants into remote areas of the desert, and organized crime has taken over the smuggling routes. Over the past 3 years, 6 women in Border Patrol custody, coming from El Salvador, Mexico, and Guatemala, reported sexual assaults to Estrada's office. There are still no suspects in any of those cases. Back across the border in the Nogales soup kitchen, migrant Maria Salinas says she'd be wary of reporting any crimes that happened to her on the border.
No es fácil dar la información.
She'd worry about retaliation from organized crime.
Uno tiene miedo si no les hace nada a uno ahí ahorita, quizás a su familia de uno.
Even if they don't do anything to you right then, you worry they could do something to your family. That's the fear, she says. Reporting from Nogales, Mexico, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. Burmese refugees living in the Southwest are working hard to learn English, even though some are illiterate.
You will see some of them who have not held a pencil before, who are now just beginning to write.
Stay tuned for that story and more. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Imagine trying to learn a brand new language. Now imagine you're in your 60s or 70s and illiterate. That's the scenario for many senior refugees resettled in Phoenix. From the Fronteras desk, Stina Sieg recently visited a group whose future depends on learning English.
It's Wednesday at the Helen Drake Senior Center in West Phoenix. So there's line dancing in the cafeteria and sewing in the craft room. And in a meeting room down the hall, English class. Teacher Katie Stevens holds up a colorful map of the United States.
Okay, where do we live?
Yellow.
Yellow? Okay, and what is our state?
Arizona.
Arizona. Arizona.
Stevens is teaching senior refugees from Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. Most are Muslims who have spent their lives in fear of religious conflict and a military dictatorship. Some have lived for years in refugee camps. Stevens says that some have come to the U.S. not knowing how to use a stove, a telephone, or shower.
You will see some of them who have not held a pencil before, who are now just beginning to write.
And they must if they want to become American citizens. That's the ultimate goal of these classes, run by the Area Agency on Aging. Refugees over 65 can receive a stipend from the federal government. It's just over $700 a month, and it's the only money most of these seniors have. It runs out if they don't get their citizenship within 7 years of arriving in this country. To get that, they have to pass a citizenship test in English. Stephen says she and her sister, who also teaches here, know what a monumental task that is.
But we're teachers. We're always teachers. So we work with where they are.
And she says where they are is at the very beginning of learning this new, complicated language.
He just can't speak just his name, just 3 words, yeah.
Class translator Nie Su Ta speaks for Joquette. He's 75, and he's been here for almost 7 years. He's been studying English for nearly that long. Unlike many of his classmates, he can read in his mother tongue, but he's plagued with memory problems and has to carry around a little book filled with important information, like addresses and his grown children's birthdays. Ket says he wants to be able to communicate with people in this country. When he goes to the market, he can't talk to anyone, and it's frustrating. Once, he got lost in the city and didn't know what to do. But at least when he takes his citizenship test later this year, he'll have the help of a translator because of his memory loss. Most of his classmates won't have that safety net. They're flipping through calendars to learn about numbers and dates, still trying to get a working understanding of the basic stuff. And these are the lucky ones. Jolie Bonying-Gabo runs the refugee program for the Area Agency on Aging. She says there isn't room for every senior who wants in.
They are home waiting and they keep calling us, when are we going to start?
And they aren't just Burmese. Her group works with seniors from around the world. Cubans, Russians, Syrians. And Bonying-Gabo says they all face the same problem, the same 7-year deadline before their federal benefits run out.
They see us as we have solutions for everything, but we don't. Yeah, we really don't. We can just try what we can.
Bonying-Gabo says what the program really needs now is more volunteer teachers. In Phoenix, I'm Stina Sieg.
A graffiti artist from South Africa is visiting the U.S.-Mexico border to do a mural project promoting peace. KJZZ's Monica Ortiz Uribe reports his goal is to inspire young people.
Anthony Kirkwood, whose artistic name is Gasak, started painting in high-crime neighborhoods in his native South Africa. There he saw how poverty and drugs wreaked havoc on young people. For his next project, he decided to come to the U.S.-Mexico border, where drug violence has taken thousands of lives in the last 5 years.
I wanted to go where the heart of the drug war is, and I did a lot of research, and I came up with Juarez and El Paso.
Outside Juarez City Hall, Gasak tests a bottle of gold spray paint. Not far from here, he's painted the face of Nelson Mandela. He plans to portray 7 more inspirational leaders, including Pope Francis and Martin Luther King, in El Paso and Juarez.
And I want to just bring peace and awareness to this drug war in the best way that I can through my art.
The geographic location of the murals will form a heart across both cities. Gasak is collaborating with other young artists, including a local filmmaker. Carolina Federic is a Juarez City Councilwoman.
It's really nice to see someone fighting to help all the young kids to be away from the organized crime.
Drug trafficking organizations in Juarez recruit young people to work as drug mules or hitmen. The majority of those killed by drug violence here are younger than age 35. In Ciudad Juarez, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
After the hard winter we saw this year, the reemergence of spring is a welcome sight. As Frontera's commentator Yvette Benavides reminds us, the promise of spring comes and goes. Past seasons can be bountiful and bleak at the same time.
The scant rain we've had lately has been a blessing on our backyard vegetable garden. My husband has designed a veritable oasis with beds of broccoli, spinach, arugula, radishes, tomato vines sagging with varieties I never knew existed, and each with whimsical names like Early Girl, Celebrity, Cherokee Purple, Honey Bunch, and Black Creme. I water and do my mini harvesting every single day. My husband labors over the weeding and studies the weather forecasts, eager for the next dousing of rare and miraculous rainwater. The garden brings us closer to the earth, closer to time. It's a celebration of all the senses. Just to brush against the dill, cilantro, oregano, and basil beats out a heady cloud of the aromatic herbs. We commune with watchful urracas and mockingbirds bathing in the birdbath and letting out their guileless songs. It's a bustling, joyous place. In late evening hours, even in quiet stillness, the place fairly breathes. The gray period in between planting seasons in late winter is a low time. The once bursting beds go to seed and become an arid wasteland while we dream of planting time and warm days. The gray period between planting seasons for my mother would have come around in late fall too. One of 8 children of a single mother, she joined the family of migrant workers in the fields before there was any semblance of child labor laws. In the decades before Cesar Chavez's struggle to establish farm workers' rights, working conditions were deplorable and dismal. Even so, my mother and her family traveled to and from El Norte many times during the 1950s. Those small, fine-fingered hands did the precise work that no machine can ever even attempt. The migrant worker, unrelentingly persecuted and condemned, indeed feeds the world. Sometimes the family had no shelter. They slept out on the campo. My grandmother even cooked outside, stretching out the meager rations of beans and tortillas, what became a feast of pechuga de ángel to the hungry children. They didn't get to eat what the pisca yielded in those expansive fruit orchards, in the long, daunting rows of vegetables, or in the desolate fields of a strange town. Nor were they allowed to eat in some of the establishments just north of San Antonio. When the family walked into one place to order hamburgers, their order was promptly rejected, and they were asked to leave. Their return to Laredo and their little house on Zaragoza Street signaled the return to school. My mother was ever the new kid of the class in those years. That's not an easy lot for anyone. Even so, she prized education above all things. I learned that from her. I also learned to appreciate hard, honest work. My mother's grandfather, a man fittingly named Santitos, used to work as a gardener for the moneyed families who lived in the Heights barrio in Laredo. Sometimes he came home with ample hand-me-down dresses of the patrona's daughters for his three skinny granddaughters. Sometimes the patrona sent him home with bags of produce, usually bruised or overripe fruit. No le hace, he would say. Quítale la manchita y lo demás está bueno. Nothing ever went to waste. Nothing was taken for granted. Today, my mother's yard in Laredo boasts lush lawns of St. Augustine grass, flowering laureles with deep pink blooms, flirtatious fuchsia bougainvillea, tiny orange trumpets of jacaranda, vermilion tulipanes, succulent chisme, and crepe myrtles with their papery white, purple, and pink blossoms. The beating drone of harmonizing chicharras, bees, and hummingbirds fills the hot, breezy air. They glide and dart among the plants she keeps so well tended and that adorn the home she and my father worked so hard to build and maintain. When I visit her there, I'm greeted first by the Esperanza, a robust shrub of goldenrod blooms like small bells to announce my arrival, my return to my own childhood home, where I never knew hunger. On a recent visit to my home in San Antonio, my mother marveled at the backyard bumper crops. As I watered one bed at one end of the yard, she approached me and dusted off a calabaza. "Oh, I must have missed that one," I said, wiping the sweat from my upper lip. "How'd you find it?" "Years of practice," she said.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations along the Southwest. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.